This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Well, a very good evening. Welcome to the Watford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. Jake Watson with you all the way through until 10 p.m. this evening with a few fan shows for you all, an hour long each. But as always, starting off with Watford this evening. And a week is a long time, isn't it, in football, chaps? Andy and Matt, as ever, from the Hornet's Nest, joining me in the Love Sport studio. Chaps, where do we start? Where do we start this evening?
Well, I think we're already, 10, 20 seconds into the show. This time on Tuesday, Southampton were already 1-0 up.
Oh, you've been preparing that one, haven't you?
I have, yeah. That was in the brain.
It was worth it. No, but it is, isn't it? It's frustrating, isn't it? In the sense of where we were sat at this point last week. Mm. And I don't think either of us or any of us kind of foresaw that we would have been at this point just a week on. I mean, not horrid performances, but just unfortunately just fallen short maybe on both occasions.
Yeah, it's not been the best week of our season by any means, has it? I think after drawing against Southampton, I think that the pressure was on to get a result against Wolves yesterday.
Yeah, massively.
We don't know obviously how much that goal rocked. That early goal from Southampton rocked Watford, because you know you train all that time, you prepare your tactics for the game, and suddenly within the space of 10 seconds, that game plan has sort of gone out the window. Mm. And Southampton just have to sit back and almost had the perfect away performance. God knows what it must have been like to be a Saints fan and watching your team hold on from 7 seconds in for almost the entire 90 minutes.
So when you say, oh, we've scored too early here.
Yeah. That is a valid time to say you've scored too early. But I mean, Cathcart certainly on Tuesday just looked to be completely shell-shocked. That first half was one of the worst performances I've seen from a usually reliable Craig Cathcart in a very long time. And I think that early goal just completely rocked Watford, and Southampton were then able to set up, and Hasenhüttl got them drilled really well, I thought. It was a good defensive display from Southampton. But this week has come back. The Deeney red card has sort of come back to haunt us a little bit, because I think in the last two games we've looked a little bit toothless up front, and we've left yesterday sort of rearing that red card and thinking, you know, it's a big what if on our season, the red card against Arsenal.
Yeah, I was just saying to the other chaps actually before we came in, you know, my take of the situation, obviously you guys have a much, much better one than I, but it just feels that at the most crucial of moments with the last couple of games, and again, I did mention it last week, of Troy Deeney with that red card, but also Ben Foster. I know we'll get on to talk about that with the Wolves game. Your two most experienced, reliable performers have maybe just the vital moments actually cost your side. And you don't want to single out people, but on these occasions, they have, you know, haven't they?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think you look at it as well in a certain sense, and you sort of cling to positives. You look at obviously the last minute goal we got against Southampton, you're thinking, well, can we take that into Saturday? And on the face of it, Andre Gray's done pretty well. I mean, he scored a couple of goals, really, really important ones as well. But obviously that's overlooking the overall performance that Troy Deeney brings in terms of his composure, his leadership, all those kinds of things. And I think Watford, I think Andy's right, I think we've looked a little bit rattled. And I think that comes from the early goal against Southampton. That's to be expected. Southampton, credit to them. You know, but I was hoping, I'm sure Andy was the same and every Watford fan was, that we'd come out of Tuesday almost feeling like that was a win in a strange kind of way because it was so late, and take that forward into Saturday. And unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
I think like 3-4 minutes after that early goal, Andre Gray had the perfect chance to equalise, and then that completely changes the game. Suddenly you're 5 minutes in, it's almost back to square one, really. Mm. The scores are level and Watford can start playing the way they want to. But, you know, Gray, whilst he got the equaliser in the final minute and got a goal yesterday, I don't think, if we look at the entire 90 minutes, he hasn't stepped up in Deeney's absence. Yeah, I do. Performance-wise,
yeah. Because I was expecting different, watching the highlights, thinking that both goals were really well taken.
But we don't look threatening at those in the entire... Well, we haven't looked at that threatening in the entire 90 minutes when we don't have Troy Deeney. Mm. We mentioned this when we played Huddersfield. Yes, we won, but we put a ball in the box in the air, no one's going to win the header. We don't have that aerial presence up front. We can't hold the ball up. Gray isn't as good as holding the ball up as Troy is. And I think Jerry and Troy work better in a partnership than obviously Jerry and Gray, because they haven't played together that much this season. So whilst he's got the goals, I have been a little bit disappointed in terms of his sort of, you know, take your chance sort of thing in Deeney's absence, which I think maybe I'm being a bit critical, but it's a crunch stage of the season, yeah, isn't it? You've got to take your chance when you get given it.
But I don't, on the face of it, Gray for me has done his job in terms of scoring those goals, and fair point, you know, that, you know, it's not Troy Deeney. Is it not then up to other people around them, Matt, to step up? Because, I mean, can Gray do much more than score in both of those games?
Well, the supporting cast does have to be stronger. I do agree, Jake. Obviously, you're looking at people like Delafay, who's shown his match-winning quality in the last couple of weeks. And he makes a valid point. We become a little bit more predictable, I think, when Troy is not in the lineup, because people know we're not going to be throwing bodies into the box. We're not going to be crossing as much. Mm. We're going to play in this sort of tippy-tappy stuff behind. Now, certainly first half, there was a couple of times where we got in towards the box and then almost got to the box and ran out of ideas. That's certainly the feeling I got. So it's you know, I don't think you can fault Andre in terms of his goal scoring, because we wouldn't even be competing for seventh if some of those goals that he scored,
yeah,
you know, like the ones against Leicester, etc., didn't go in. But at the same time, Andre unfortunately has developed a reputation for wasting chances in front of goal before he takes one. And we would be talking about a world-class centre forward if he was someone who was prolific in front of goal with every chance he got.
I think it's kind of emphasised the debate about whether Gray should be starting on the bench or should be starting in the lineup. Mm. And, you know, he's come off the bench in several games this season and scored the winner. He deserved his start, and I think in the semi-final ahead of Delafeu. But recently, just based on the whole 90 minutes, I think what we're seeing is he is a super sub. I think we get that impact off the bench, and whilst he has to start in Deeney's absence, I think obviously once Troy comes back, it will be Gray starting on the bench again, and I think that's fair.
Okay. So on Cathcart then, there's no need to talk about the goal itself, because do you know what? It's not that glaring of an error. I think it's somewhat unfortunate that, you know, first of all, he's been closed down as quickly as he has, and then the block actually then bounces straight into Shane Long's path, because that's quite rare in itself. So I think, you know, I have a certain degree of sympathy with Craig there. I don't think, I mean, in hindsight, he would have done things differently. Probably would have passed it back to Ben Foster. But you say he was very, very rattled after that. He came off at half time. Was that because of the way he was playing?
I think so, yeah. He got on the kickoff yesterday, the ball was played back to him at the very start, and he got a big cheer when he passed it left to Jose Holabas.
It's like, you just pass it for 10 seconds, but right, now okay, now we can start.
Classic football fans, yeah. Everyone turned into each other. Oh, we've already lasted longer than last week, sort of thing. I think he was substituted because of his performance in the first half, and you know, Javi's not afraid to make those difficult decisions. It wasn't good enough. There were times when he and Ben weren't communicating quite as well as they have done, so he was rattled by it. I'm sure, you know, I'd be rattled by it too. Craig's usually the most reliable player on the pitch for us, and just a rare off day for him, I think.
Yeah, and you know, obviously Javi's ability to change the system is one of his real strengths, and we saw that. Unfortunately, didn't quite work out yesterday, as I'm sure we'll touch upon later, but Javi's ability to sort of go to three at the back or change the system, go to a more inverted diamond, whatever, I think that's one of his strengths, his tactical nous. Didn't quite work for him yesterday, but it's worked more times than not this season.
Any other word on the Southampton game before we move on to Wolves?
Like Matt said, at the time, you know, it was a point gained. But if you had said, you know, 1-1 before the game, I probably wouldn't have taken it. But in that moment, in that 90 minutes, I thought Southampton played pretty well, did a job on us, and we were lucky to come out with a point in the end.
Okay then, guys, you're listening to the Watford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. When we come back, we'll talk about the Wolves game from this past weekend.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter, or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
So let's chat about Wolves again. Not the result that we wanted. A 2-1 defeat. This time, Ben Foster at fault for the second. But is it just in general Wolves were better on the day? Was it an under par Watford? Matt, what do you think?
Well, they're a good team. Let's put it this way. They wouldn't be where they are if they, you know, I think we said when we pre-semi-final, my big fear was Jimenez and Hotter. I think Hotter's really improved second half of the season. So no surprise to see those two on the score sheet. You could see perhaps the first goal coming. Kapu hooks one off the line just before they score. But then actually, it's easy to forget that Will Hughes had a flick over the bar just before they scored. So different game if he scores. We get back, you know, I was hoping that we'd start the second half positively, we'd get the goal. The big thing for me, though, and to be uber critical on Javi Garcia, and I don't like to do it, he changed to three at the back. And I just think he brought on Cabaselli, took off Will Hughes, and I just thought that kind of invited Wolves to have a go to sort of, I don't know, it just sort of disrupted us a little bit.
Yeah, what do you think the thinking was behind that? Because I was watching the game and the commentators picked up on it as well, that, you know, it just felt that maybe at that point Watford were in the ascendancy, but that tactical change somewhat killed whatever momentum you did have at the time.
Yeah, I think it's easy, isn't it, with hindsight to say, because if obviously Watford had gone on and won the game and we went to three at the back, we'd be lauding Javi for what was a great tactical change. I don't know why he made it. He said he wanted to stop, you know, Wolves' ability to hurt us. And obviously Neves' cross for the winner was brilliant. But, you know, it just sort of disrupted us a little bit. I don't think it was necessary at the time for us to change the system. I thought we were doing okay up until that point.
I'm not sure where I stand there, because I think Will was injured, because I think he went straight down the tunnel. So that's why he's made the sub in the first place. And at the time, I didn't actually mind it, him changing the system, because yes, we were the better team, quite clearly. You know, Wolves made a rare mistake to let Gray in and equalise, and you sensed that a goal was there for us, for the taking. But I felt going three at the back, it was clearly a sign that Javi sort of felt the same, and he wanted to be a bit more attacking, use our pace down the wings, Kiko and Jose. And to try and get that winner, because he realised that, you know, if we win this game, then chances are we're leading that. Well, we would be leading that race for seventh. So I didn't mind it too much. Whilst we were still in the ascendancy, but I think the problem then comes is because we conceded that goal so quickly after going to three at the back. It must have only been about 2 or 3 minutes. And let's not forget it. Unfortunately, we're talking about another really avoidable goal, another mistake from Ben. Again, that's probably only the second mistake he's made all season, but unfortunately, because that's so recent and such a crucial time of the season, it's, you know, it's really hindered us. But I think because that goal's happened so quickly after making that sub, we're all now looking back on that substitution and identifying it as a mistake. And perhaps it was, perhaps Javi should have let it go on till, you know, maybe a few more minutes to see how we're doing going into the final 10 and then make the change. But you know, like Matt said, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? And it didn't quite work yesterday, but I'm glad that, you know, we've got a manager that's happy to sort of make that change and make that have that positive attitude to say, we're not just going to take a point, I want to win this game. And it just didn't work off, but it was a mistake that was easily avoidable that cost us.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, with your point about your manager, because it is so easy, isn't it, sometimes as fans, and we've all been there when we've not particularly supported or liked our manager, when you sat there in the stands and either you're waiting for the team lineup to be announced and you know you're not going to be happy with it, or they make a substitution and do you know what I mean? Yeah. And you're just lamenting every single thing they do because you don't trust and believe in what they're doing. And this is what is nice, that even though it didn't work out, even though you lost the game, you're not blaming the manager because you understand the process behind it.
Yeah, I think any fan who is blaming Javi totally for it, it's very, very harsh. You know, away at Man City this season, we made something like 7 changes, and it almost, from a fan, you know, travelling to the game, almost felt as if, like, well, what's the point? You know, we've kind of gifting Man City. But actually, the team we put out almost got a very, very good point away from home if it wasn't for a dodgy refereeing decision to open the floodgates. Yeah. So, you know, Javi's made decisions in the past which have been seen as bizarre or odd, etc. But they've almost worked. And there's absolutely no reason for me as a fan of a club who are pushing for Europe and in an FA Cup semi-final to doubt his tactical nous. Because there's a reason I'm not a football manager. So
yeah, I know, but
thanks.
but it's true though, isn't it? We've all been sat there, like, and when every single fan is looking at thinking, we're all thinking the same thing here. What is the manager doing? What's he thinking? But yeah, no, it is nice to see that everyone is behind the manager in that sense. Even when he makes mistakes, you're not blaming him. But on the balance of the game, I thought it was a fairly entertaining one. It is probably tough on the balance to have a loser on it. Do you think a point would have been fair? Do you really think the mistake from Foster decided it?
Yeah, unfortunately it did. I mean, I don't know how much wind played a factor. I don't really want to, you know, stoop to some really lame excuses, but obviously because it's the same for both sides. But in terms of conditions, you know, and also going back to the substitution, did it kind of disrupt our communication at the back with the change to the three, potentially?
Yeah.
Clutching at straws,
yeah, maybe.
We said before the game, didn't we, it was a must-not-lose game. And Andy's actually spot on when he says the result on Tuesday and the sort of disappointment of not winning the game almost adds a certain degree of pressure where there wouldn't have been if we had won the game on Tuesday, which we saw as, no disrespect to Southampton, more of a routine game. So
of course,
if we'd gone in with a win, suddenly you're talking about a big 3 points, suddenly you're talking about momentum being on our side and all those great things. Wolves obviously got a great result in midweek. They were always going to be difficult. People talked about revenge. I don't see that, to be honest. I think it's just two sides playing a really good game of football, trying to win. Credit to them. They're a good side. If they go and get seventh, you know, they're more than deserving of that. But it really does sting because of, you know, almost it feels like our season came down to that for seventh. And unfortunately, we just weren't able to quite get over the line.
Mm. We're so evenly matched with Wolves. They're probably the most sort of similar side to us, I think, in the past, since we've been promoted. Like, there's always been a slight advantage or disadvantage between the teams that we face. But this season, us and Wolves, you know, I just can't really compare. Well, you can compare the two. There's nothing really separating us apart from a few points. But in terms of performance, I think both sides are actually very, very similar. And it was great to see two sides going for it yesterday. You know, I'll probably look back on it. Yes, I'm disappointed with a defeat. Of course I am. But it was an entertaining game of football, and that's what we want as supporters. We want to be entertained. We don't want to do a Sean Dyche Burnley. Although I love Sean Dyche, we don't want to turn up every week and watch us play hoofball, do we? So it was an entertaining game.
Yeah. Let's talk about Ben then, shall we?
Mm.
It's felt, well, every time I've spoken to you guys, an absolute shoo-in for player of the year. You've got lots of contenders, though, on the face of it. Kapuen, Doucouré, I think, Delafeu, Troy Deeney. Lots of people who've had very, very good seasons. Now, the voting hasn't happened yet. Is it happening?
It's just opened.
It's just opened. It's not really ideal timing, is it, for Ben?
No.
To have back-to-back high-profile mistakes.
He should have done it either right at the very start or when voting had closed.
He's not thought this through, has
he? No, he hasn't. No, his time is a little bit off. I was actually talking to my family before the game.
Yeah.
We were talking because they were playing the goal of the season montage, which, by the way, is incredible.
It's one of the best.
If you get a chance to see it, it's fantastic. I mean, considering, I think when we were in the Premier League in 06-07, a Darius Henderson penalty was on the goal of the season shortlist, I think. But we were talking, you know, who's your player of the season? And for us, it came down to, I don't know if you agree, but it came down to three contenders. Obviously, Foster and Kapu, I think, are the front runners.
Yeah.
But then also Jose Holabas.
Okay, I didn't even mention him.
Exactly.
I think so. Yeah.
I don't think Troy, I don't think Delafeu are in with a shout. I think it's, for me personally, it's between those three. And after yesterday, I'm not saying that mistake has completely changed my mind, because Kapu was there or thereabouts anyway. Mm. But I think this season I've left more games complimenting Kapu than I have Ben.
Yeah.
And Ben, don't get me wrong, Ben has kept us in a lot of games this season and won us a lot of points. But considering, you know, Kapu, from what he was last season to what he is this season, he's just been phenomenal. Mm. And I think if we don't have Etienne Kapu in our side, we're a little bit lost, I think.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree. I remember a couple of years ago, actually, he started the season, I think it was on the Mazzari, where he scored like some absolute screamers in the first few weeks of the season. I'm thinking, my goodness, he's adding goals to his game now, and he's becoming almost this all-round midfielder. And then he went, had a quiet spell. And actually, it's always been the consistency with Kapu.
Yeah.
That's why he's not at Spurs.
I was going to say, he's an engine room.
Exactly. He's an engine room midfielder, but he's added so much to his game. And I think yesterday was a case in point. He clears one off the line. He's running around. He's probably Watford's best player yesterday. Jose Holabas deserves a mention for the sole reason that this was a guy who didn't even want to come to the club. You know, he had a sulky kind of personality. He's a bit kind of even when there's urgency on the pitch to get going, he's still strolling around. You know,
yeah.
he's an absolute character.
I hate that. When we have a corner in like the 92nd minute, he's just walking along, meandering to the corner flag. Sorry, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. But in terms of, yeah, he's come on leaps and bounds. And you look at the assist as well. I know Andy Robertson gets the plaudits, and rightly so. But Holabas has got like six from left back. He's still got the pace, even at 34, whatever he is. What a signing, 1.8 million.
Yeah, moment of the season is surely outpacing young Richarlison, Everton at home. That's got to be up there for moment of the season, Jose Holobas. But yeah, I think after that mistake yesterday, I think a lot of the Watford contingent will be voting for Etienne Capoue in those awards.
Matt, where's your vote? Capoue, is it?
I fear for Foster because of the last, as Andy says, the last couple of weeks. People, I like to think footballers have a larger memory span. And they can take into account that Ben has won us a lot of points, but I just feel that, you know, it's like the PFA.
Well, it's funny you say. I listened to an interview with Dave Kitson earlier on in the week, and they were asking about the PFA awards. Basically, do the players care or pay attention? And he was saying that, you know, obviously the PFA come around and they give them all the piece of paper, and the footballers, the players, basically could not care less. Yeah. And they either just think, he's been okay, right, and just tick him. And he said even in some occasions, if they didn't have to spell their names, like, all right, I'll stick Stones in then if you can't spell the other one. And so, look, I'm sure the Watford players are giving it far more attention. They know how to spell their teammates' names.
But the players have done well with Van Dijk then, haven't they?
Well, the Liverpool lad, you know. Apparently that's what some of them are like. But look, you do feel a little bit for Foster. Mm. You do, because there was calls as well for him to get back into the England squad. And there has always been this thing with Ben Foster, particularly with myself, I won't lie. I've always thought he's got that in him. And I thought this had been his most consistent season at, you know, the ripe old age of kind of the mid-30s, isn't he? Mm. Thinking, oh, brilliant. But then he's kind of just reminded of me of what I've always kind of thought of him. Brilliant goalkeeper, but he's always got that error in him, which is why he's never been at one of those big top clubs. I know it sounds harsh, and I don't really like saying it, but I think it's a bit of a fact.
I mean, look at David De Gea again today. He's made another sort of high-profile mistake. So there's nowhere to hide, is there, when you make a mistake as a goalkeeper?
Not.
So it's really unfortunate, and we should stress that apart from those two mistakes, you know, how many incredible saves has he made this season? So, it's life, unfortunately.
Celevi. Right, Watford fans are here on Love Sport Radio. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be speaking to Sarah Priestley, the curator of the Watford Museum. Do stay with us.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Welcome back. Watford fans here on Love Sport Radio. Just had a text in regarding those Player of the Year awards, and we've got a loyal fan of Ben Foster, regardless of the mistakes. He has a female fan, and he can be safe of her vote. Isn't that correct, Andy?
Yes. Okay. from the girlfriend that I'm going on holiday with on Wednesday. There we go.
Mate, if it means she comes along to the football with you just to look at Ben, then, you know, fair enough. Right, Sarah Priestley, creator of the Watford Museum, joins us on the line now. A very good evening, Sarah. Sarah, very quickly, player of the season, Ben Foster, Etienne Capoue. What do you think?
Oh, gosh. Oh, no, you got me. Will Hughes.
Oh, nice. Okay, a little bit different. Yeah. Your vote's not swayed at all on the way that Will looks, is it?
No.
Good.
Oh, and that's absolutely shocking. I don't know, thinking women go to the football to watch football.
No, of course not. Look, I didn't start this. It was Andy's girlfriend who started it. Sarah, thanks for joining us this evening. Andy was just telling me he's been along to see what you've been up to.
Yeah, we work with football fans all the time and with Watford Football Club. I'm a season ticket holder. Watford, and born next door on Vicarage Road, so it's part of what we do all the time. But yeah, we've got a really lovely exhibition on celebrating Watford at Wembley.
Hi Sarah, it's Andy here.
Hiya.
Obviously that exhibition features some memorabilia from the 1984 FA Cup final, the 99 playoff final, and of course the upcoming 2019 FA Cup final, which we've been mentioning every single week since it was announced here at Love Sport. What can Watford fans expect to see in that collection?
Right, okay, well, it's great for us because it's a mix of all those emotions and memories. Of the sort of the high points for people of 84, actually having a physical trophy from Wembley. We're really lucky that we've got the beautiful silver trophy that's on long-term loan from Watford Football Club from the playoff final in 99, right up to the current sort of like hype and sort of build up to the match that's coming up in a few weeks' time. So it's a really lovely mix of things that you'll remember from home, and you'll be like, oh, I've got one of those in my loft. Some people have actually brought things in from their loft. So if you've got something you really want to share, then bring it on down. Right right the way through to things that are absolutely unique, like Rita Taylor popped in earlier in the week. She's really kindly lent us Graham's medals, which are so poignant and so precious for us to have on display.
What about your lucky pants, Andy? They could make it into some kind of exhibit.
If we were in the FA Cup, I will wash them and then frame them and donate them.
Well,
to
there we
the
are.
Absolutely. How does that sound? We have had even weirder than that. And for me, as you know, we've all got our little memories.
You're going to have to tell me now, what's weirder than Andy's pants?
We have got a blood-stained handkerchief the Earls of Essex kept for generations in their house,
right.
Which is in a casket. We have all manner of things. We love putting things on display, and actually those kind of quirky memories that mean a lot to fans. It isn't necessarily the obvious things. There's stuff that really has a resonation for someone. So we're not against lucky pants. In fact, I'd love to have some of those original 1980s Watford Football Club pants that they did. Clean and laundered, please. So there's a few items we're still looking for the collection from the 80s. That and the Beejams carrier bag from the Division 1 promotion.
I love it. I love it.
I will 100% wash them before handing them in. I promise.
I'm framing them. Yeah.
We've got to win the FA Cup first. Otherwise, it's just a pair of pants in a museum, isn't it? So.
Now, Sarah, that's quite a collection. I think we'd all agree. And obviously, for you being the heart of the town, if you like, at the museum, and of course being a season ticket holder yourself, it must be fantastic to sort of work alongside such fantastic pieces of memorabilia. Do you have a favourite piece in the collection?
Right. It's so difficult, isn't it? I mean, for me, one of the things that we've got, which I absolutely love, is the huge rosette that was on the front of the coach taking us to the 1984 Cup final. Because in those days, everyone watched the telly the whole day. If you didn't have a ticket for the match, which I didn't, my brother went, but I stayed at home, you watched from the morning and you watched every single detail, including the clubs, the players leaving on the coach, driving there, getting there, all of that. So I love that. It's so precious, and it's just such a unique item. But yeah, you're right. It's amazing for us to work with that history, because it's my history as well, but also because it's working with the fans and it's working with the club and the Football Trust. We're part of the Watford Welcome Scheme that the club's doing, making sure that they're right in the centre of the community. So for us, that's amazing anyway, just all of those lovely little memories that people share, and that people take that time to donate something to the museum or lend it to us so that we can share it with other people.
Now, obviously, our trip to Wembley in May will only be the second time in our history that we've reached the FA Cup final. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed any sort of similarities, similar bits of memorabilia between the 1984 Cup final and this one coming up?
It's interesting because we were comparing those. So the club's brought back a rosette. They've done a limited edition one, and they made sure that we got one the day it went on sale, which is really kind of them. So rosettes used to be big. Everyone had a rosette for Wembley. So now it's a bit different. The hats that they had, now it's baseball caps and things. So it has changed. But the T-shirts are fairly similar. The scarves aren't that different, except they're actually better quality nowadays. But there are some things like the sponge, the sponge hand or the sponge shape. Nothing like that in 1984. So it's amazing. There are fashions and there are changes, but I think it also, people are going back to that 84 feel because it brings back such amazing memories for them. And we're hoping, we're going to be doing some decorations on the outside of the museum, but we're hoping other people will be getting involved in that as well. I remember us having our sort of like our windows at home decorated on the street, and it's just lovely that the whole town gets involved.
I must confess, I have purchased one of those sponge FA Cups to take along to Wembley on the 18th, and I'm not ashamed.
Why not?
Not at all. Quite right. We've got one on display.
How long's the exhibition running for, Sarah?
It's actually going to be going on till the end of May, so the last weekend. So there's plenty of chances for fans to pop in to see it on a match day, or sort of like alternatively, other days we're open Thursday to Saturday, 10 till 5. And we're going to try and arrange to be open on the morning of the West Ham match as well, because that's on a Sunday. So we'll do a special opening so that if fans haven't had a chance to get along, they'll get to come and see it probably about 10 till 1, something like that will be open for. So but always worth checking us online as well. And we're always doing more and sharing more memories. So it won't be the end of our football exhibitions. Certainly not something I love.
Wonderful. Sarah, thank you ever so much for speaking to us this evening.
Thank you.
Not a problem at all. There we are, Sarah Priestley, the curator of the Watford Museum. Watford fans, if you do get a chance, do go down, have a look, and pride and place, hopefully, in a few weeks' time. a pair of Andy's underpants.
Clean underpants.
Clean underwear. Listen to the Watford Fan Show when we come back. I don't know what, I'm going to do something a little bit different. There is a Watford song. We're going to listen, we're going to hear it, and also we're going to speak to the guy who's made it. That is up next here on the Watford Fan Show.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Okay, welcome back. Matt Churchill, writer of The Best Trip, Watford's unofficial FA Cup final song, is on the line now. We're going to hear it in just a couple of moments. But Matt, a very good evening. How are we?
Yeah, not bad at all. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, we're all right. Let's talk about football initially. All hopes now in this FA Cup final for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think after yesterday's unfortunate result, I think that's unless things go our way, we're going to be focusing fully on the FA Cup now, aren't we?
Talk us about it though, the feelings towards it. Excited, nervous, or kind of almost like a no lose situation, because obviously nobody really would have expected Watford to be there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think we've got a great opportunity to go and make a bit of history for the club. I think that we should go in, you know, thinking that we can do it. You know, on their day, City can be beaten. So there's no reason why we can't go and end our hoodoo over them as well.
And of course, take spirit from when Wigan done it. I mean, you're a better side than Wigan, aren't you? When they beat them.
But City this year are a better side than City that year. So, but they did have Ben Watson, so that wasn't as a good omen.
Yeah. Clutching at straws, but we'll take it.
Yeah.
Of course. So Matt, tell us about this song then. When did you start writing it?
So I think it was on the Thursday after the semi-final. I was sat on the train coming back from work, and I just thought, oh man, you know, if anyone's going to write this, write an FA Cup song, I want it to be me. And let's think of a good cause to support it, basically. And I thought, well, I haven't got much time to do it, you know, what with work and other commitments. So I just kind of put it together in an evening, and then spent 2 or 3 days recording it. And then it went off and took about a day and a half, 2 days to be produced and mastered. And then just kind of uploaded it to Bandcamp and started talking about it on social, really. And then I kind of did a bit of I harassed some folks on Twitter and sort of shared it. And then it seems to have been picked up quite nicely since then. I really wanted to make sure that the lyrics are, you know, fun, pragmatic. I know, you know, football songs can be a little bit novel, so it had to have that kind of fun element in there as well. And plus, I wanted to be able to get a couple of the players in, so I thought rhyming Deeney 2 and Kapu was amusing, but also kind of fitted the Watford aesthetic, if you will.
Hi there, Matt. Andy here. Are you sure that you wrote it this year and you didn't have it lined up ready in 2016 for in case we beat Palace?
Well, no, if I'd have done that, I'd come clean and I'd be honest with you. But I think going into that game, I didn't really think at the time about it. It just seemed to fit the moment that we're in as a club. You know, there's such a positive feel around the place. It definitely feels like we're going forward and progressing, and I think that the Palace semi was a bit of a bonus, really. So this one feels it's like it's a bit more of a wholesome, holistic approach, really, to the way that the team's galvanised and worked so hard through the season.
Okay, before we do hear the song, Matt, just very very quickly, I want to hear this rhyme, Deeney and Kapoor. What have you got?
I think it's the second or third lyric. It's We've got fighting spirit, we've got Deeney 2, there's Abdoulaye Decore and Etienne Capoue.
Lovely stuff. Good work that, Matt. Look, this season under Javi, how is it rated for you, you know, in your lifetime of supporting Watford? It's got to be right up there, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been going since 94, I think it is,
yeah.
95. This is, yeah, by far the best season as a whole that I've ever experienced. I don't think there'll be many Watford fans have kind of 35 or under will be saying anything different. I think the whole team looks like they're really pulling together. You know, that like we've scored so many last-minute goals this season, you know, that there's obviously a real togetherness, there's a real spirit to the way that Javi's got us as a cohesive unit. Mm. And the football's been brilliant. You know, there's some passages where you think, is this a Watford team doing this? There's one-touch passing, there's triangles, there's actual kind of forward momentum, and it looks like we want to try and score with not just kind of simple tap-ins and just trying to bundle the ball over the net, but actually trying to think about how we can pull teams apart defensively to try and create something that's not only very pragmatic, but also a joy to watch and ultimately for the players to actually play in. It's been incredible.
Yeah, Matt, before we do a little plug for where people can get the song, etc., I'm sure like every other Watford fan, you've been kind of dreaming about the final already. What happens in your mind when you close your eyes at night? What's happening at the FA Cup final in Wembley?
Oh, crikey. Well, obviously we are singing louder than City because they're only going to take 20,000 fans,
yeah,
or whatever
of
it is. The 1881 have done an amazing job, and there's flags going throughout, and it's probably about, I don't know, the 84th minute for some poetic justice, and Capoue nods in from a corner to steal a win with 5 minutes remaining. That sounds like it would do for me anyway.
Just quickly, Matt, you are a music man. Where do you stand on the Zedcar's I'm Still Standing debate?
Well, when the club announced it, I was like, well, OK, this could be interesting. My big question was, why do it now? Why not stick with Zedcar's to the end of the season? I'm quite a superstitious guy, so it feels that you kind of break the karma of all that kind of good spirit that's around the club. You replace it now, four or five games to the end of the season, and we've not won either of those three games where we've not had Zedcar's. So
exactly.
I'm a big proponent of trying. I'm Still Standing next year.
but the film would have been released by then. I'm not sure Elton John would be too happy about that.
Come on then, Matt. Where can we get this song? Where can the Watford fans go download and kind of support what you've been doing?
Cool, thank you. Yeah, so it's at watfordsongs.bandcamp.com, and all of the proceeds that we're raising are going to go to the Watford Community Trust.
All right, top stuff. Matt, thanks for your time this evening. And if you stay tuned in for the rest of the show, I promise you we'll play it out. We'll play a proper full-length version as well before the show's out. How does that sound?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's fabulous stuff. Thanks so much, guys. Really, really appreciate it.
Not a problem at all. There we are. That is Matt Churchill. He is the writer of The Best Trip. It's an unofficial FA Cup final song, but all proceeds do go to the Watford FC Trust. Watford fans, go out there, download it, listen to it, support it, and we will hear it again before the end of the show. You are listening to the Watford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. Up next, we are going to preview your next game in the Premier League. The small matter of Chelsea.
This is Love Sport.
So, Watford Fan Show here. Let's talk about Chelsea up next. It's the run and the race. We've obviously had the seventh place and the fourth place one. I was just saying as we go before the show started to Chizzy, who was, of course, hosting the fans forum, big Chelsea fan, that since last Wednesday, the teams in the race for the top four have dropped 15 points between them. Man City and Liverpool have dropped less than that in 2019.
Wow.
So, Chelsea, that? I've obviously just been to see my team play Arsenal today. Arsenal, rubbish. You know, I fancy Leicester when we played Chelsea on the final day of the season. They're there for the taking, isn't it? It's not as scary as the prospect of playing one of these teams at the moment, is it? And I know Chelsea is still Chelsea, and on paper they've got better players. But yeah, I mean, there's a chance, right?
There is, yeah. I think it all depends on the attitude that Watford go into this game with. I think if we go in thinking that, yep, seventh definitely is still out of reach, then I can't see us getting anything, because we've got to rely on an already relegated Fulham to take some points off Wolves.
Three wins in a row, mate.
Which is possible. Yeah. It is possible, but the realist in me is saying that Wolves aren't going to let it slip with two games to go, albeit one of those at Anfield on the final day, but I don't think it will matter at that point. However, if we go in with the attitude where we say, yeah, we can still get seventh, then I can honestly see Watford getting getting something from the game. Obviously, Deeney's returning. That's going to be the big team news.
Yeah.
So it's going to be obviously very, very difficult. We haven't even taken a point away at one of the big six this season. I think the only points we've taken is that win against Spurs at home at the very start of the season, I believe. So that's something that we could learn from Wolves from. Obviously, they're very good against those big sides, and we're still working them out. I think we're certainly better this season in terms of performance levels, like we've discussed last week. But in terms of results, our performances aren't reflecting the results that we've got against them.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing, isn't it? With the exception of Liverpool, who, you know, for most of the game at Vicarage Road, we were very competitive against them. Obviously, we know what happened at Anfield. With the exception of those two games, we've played really well against the top six. We just don't have the points to show for them. And obviously, we know full well what happened against Arsenal and, you know, played really well with 10 men and deserved something out of the game, if nothing more. So, you know, it's frustrating for us, but we know what we're capable of against top six. So that's kind of the attitude, the mentality we have to go in with. We've played well at Stamford Bridge in recent years without getting the rewards. We picked up a point there under Kike, you know, back in 2015. So it is possible. Obviously, you know, Chelsea are still fighting for top four. I think Watford, you know, should be absolutely going with the mindset just to finish as high as possible, get as many points, and then hopefully the team slip up. They can't afford to have anything other than the top performance because they will get beaten. And crucially, might I add, you know, for the cup final to come, we need the mentality to be right. We need the momentum on our side. And if we're not going in and we're not playing like we know we can and we're not hitting those levels, then we've got, you know, we're going into the FA Cup final not off the best run of results, and that would be devastating.
What have you made of Chelsea, though, this season? It's a pretty strange situation, isn't it? Where everyone seems kind of dead set against the manager. And again, I was saying earlier, it seems that no matter what Javi does, if it doesn't work out as hoped, if the gamble doesn't pay off or the decision doesn't pay off, if you try something a little bit different, the Watford fans are in full support of him. And again, I was saying the same to you off air about Leicester under Brendan Rodgers at the moment. Each time he does something different, you're fully behind it and you support it and you almost believe and understand his thoughts. Whereas at Chelsea, it seems it's the complete opposite. But as things stand, they're doing significantly better than last season. You've got a manager who at the start didn't really speak a huge amount of English. But they're fourth, right? 2 points behind Spurs, who were deemed to be having a very decent season. They're ahead of Arsenal and Manchester United and semi-finals of the Europa League. Picked up a point today at Old Trafford. It's a strange one, isn't it, Chelsea? I can't work out myself whether they're doing well or whether everyone else is just doing poor and they're just doing maybe just a tad better.
I think I live with a Chelsea flatmate. Yeah. And, you know,
does he hate Sarri?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say hate. Hate's quite a strong word.
He wants him out.
He doesn't want Sarri to be there next season.
Yeah.
And you know, he's not a plastic Chelsea fan. He goes to the games. So he does spend his money, he puts his money where his mouth is, and he does go. And he's really passionate about it. But he says this season, you know, he feels they've obviously got players like Hazard who can, you know, one of the best players in the league, and they should be
But other than that, not
potentially challenging for top spot, but comfortably in the top in the top four. I think throughout the season, I think that the supporters have just been getting really fed up with Sarri putting square pegs in round holes, and they've been crying out, obviously before his injury, for Hudson-Odoi to start playing more regularly, and that hasn't been happening. Only recently, when the fans have started to get on Sarri's back, you know, they'll have a bad 20 minutes at home, and he just says the atmosphere is just awful because the fans want to see something. It's, you know, it does get a little bit predictable when they just pass it to Hazard and let Hazard tear defence.
Exactly.
So I think their expectations are probably a little bit higher because of their history, because of who they are. And I think Sarri only recently has started putting Hudson-Odoi in the starting 11. To sort of manage those expectations and to just give Chelsea fans something to cheer about. I think it's obviously good that they're doing well in the Europa League. That's keeping the fans happy. But I think certainly from what my flatmate has been saying, you know, there's a real air of discontent around Chelsea at the moment. And if I was in that position, right, well, we'd happily take fourth. If they want to swap and be in a Europa League semi-final, I'll take it.
Well, of course. I mean, there is a malaise around Chelsea, and that's the really puzzling thing. But actually, they might be coming to a turning point, really, in terms of the criticisms around them not using the youth products they've got. And obviously they've been doing it with Loftus-Cheek and Hudson-Odoi, but only almost begrudgingly, it seems at times, even though the fans are crying out for it. Might this transfer ban that's coming up actually benefit the club in the long term, because they have to turn to their homegrown resources and give these guys more game time and actually say, well, we're going to build our core team around these guys, around the Hudson-Odois, those sorts of players. And they might lose Hazard and they might have a couple of years in the so-called quote-unquote wilderness, even though sixth is not the end of the world.
The wilderness.
But
Europa League.
Off the pitch, I just think it is ridiculous at the moment, with Abramovich seemingly disinterested, and there's this disconnect that's on the terraces and it's also on the pitch. And you do feel for them a little bit, because it's could happen to anybody, but the core of their team is still to be admired. And obviously we know they're going to pose a massive challenge in the week.
Yeah. For sure. I'm on the fence. You know, do you give him a window to talk about square pegs, round holes? Do you allow him to bring in players, to put the players in the positions that he wants to? Or sometimes, you know, the fans of football clubs are the best place people to know whether the feeling and the sense around a football club is right or wrong. Again, you talk about Claude Puel. You talk about so many occasions when people say, why do you want to get rid of him? You know, what more do you want? Well, the fans do know, don't they? The fans do know.
Yeah, I mean, when you start, like we had it under Mazzarri, when you start getting that atmosphere in the stadium, it's very, very difficult to turn it around.
Yeah.
I think Everton arguably came very close this season with Silva, because there was talk of him being sacked after we beat him, or them rather. And he's, in fairness to him, he's managed to turn it around. Mm. But once you start getting that really negative vibe around the place, especially your home ground,
it's toxic, isn't it?
Yeah. And say Everton with Allardyce as well. You know, they improved so much points wise. The Everton fans hated him, and again, people are sat here saying, "What more do Everton want?" Well, it's kind of irrelevant if you don't support that football club, and that's obviously the view of Chelsea, isn't it? The large consensus. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But for yourselves, how do you go about winning this one? You say, against these bigger sides, on a number of occasions, you have been fairly positive, haven't you? You've not done don't want to throw anybody else under the bus to team-wise, but you've not gone there and parked, you know, the bus. You have gone there and tried to be positive and do something. And, you know, Chelsea went there just last week and got a draw. I know Leicester went there and won. They're not the formidable force at the Bridge. Well, frankly, no one is right now, are they? Your Arsenals and your Manchester Uniteds.
No, absolutely not. And I think the gap between, you know, your Leicester's, Everton's, Watford's, Wolves and Arsenal, Chelsea's, United's will narrow within the next few seasons. We're seeing that gap get a little bit, in terms of quality wise anyway, getting a little bit smaller. Because it's almost separating into even the top half into three separate leagues, isn't it? You've got your City and Liverpool and then the top four and then the race for seventh. And that's just going to get smaller. And you're right, you know, since Fergie left United, teams aren't scared to go to places like Old Trafford. I don't think Watford, you know, after getting promoted, I don't think we're particularly scared of going to the Emirates, to going to Stamford Bridge anymore. So there is every chance that we could get signed if we get off to a good start. Like you said, we're not going to park the bus. I don't think we've particularly parked any bus this season. Yeah. Watford know how to manage a game well, and I think that's our strong point. That if we go a goal, two goals up, we know how to see a game out. So if we manage to take that lead, I still think we'll push for a second, because that's what we do. But in terms of being able to see it out, that's where I'm feeling almost confident.
Not confident.
No, I know what you mean.
But I know we can do it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
absolutely. We're not built to sit in either. We've said it many times in the show. So let's have a go.
Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.